Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Bad, crazy, and good martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And obviously, a lot has changed since our Friday edition, given the multiple attacks in Paris on Friday evening, leaving at least 129 dead, hundreds injured, close to 100 of them critically. And we'll learn more about their condition as time goes on. But of course, the investigation is now unfolding, and there are French military attacks going on against Raqqa and other ISIS strongholds. But we start with what we consider to be probably one of the worst martinis out of this, and this is courtesy of Yahoo News. The Islamic State's claim of responsibility for the Paris attacks that killed 129 people, including one American college student, has the potential to dramatically alter U.S. intelligence assessments of the group's capabilities to carry off well-orchestrated mass casualty attacks. At the same time, the attacks underscore the mounting difficulties U.S. and Western intelligence agencies are having in tracking the terror group, resulting in repeated warnings that their efforts to conduct surveillance of Islamic State suspects were, quote-unquote, going dark. Over the past year, current and former intelligence officials tell Yahoo News that Islamic State terror suspects have moved to increasingly sophisticated methods of encrypted communications using new software such as Tor that intelligence agencies are having difficulty penetrating, a switch that some officials say was accelerated by the disclosures of former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Jim, there's so many bad prongs to this martini, I don't even know where to start here.
We were picking this one as the bad martini because this may be the single most ominous aspect for the not-too-distant future. When the Russian airliner explodes in midair, ISIS is claiming responsibility. It's bad, but people had said, look, it's Sharm el-Sheikh in the Sinai Peninsula. The Egyptian government is not necessarily top of the line. Clearly, Russia was not handling all the security around that flight. You can almost kind of see, okay, if there's an area where security is lax, that's pretty bad. The French, for all of, you know, love them or hate them, and at this point, we certainly, our hearts should be going out to them, they're generally pretty good at this. They've been dealing with terrorism for a really long time. And in terms of their counterterrorism, their intelligence, their police, their various efforts to intercept attacks like this, they're generally considered near the top of the line, particularly around Paris. These were soft targets, but they were very high-profile targets. Obviously, lots of people there. The ability of these guys, and as you said, six separate attacks, they're thinking something in the neighborhood of 12 perpetrators of these attacks, maybe a support group of another half dozen. For these guys to operate under the radar screen for so long and put together, you know, think about the attack that had suicide bombers and suicide belts. It had grenades, apparently. It had shootings and all that stuff. This was a very complicated, sophisticated attack and was entirely put together under the noses of French intelligence. That's really unnerving because, as I mentioned, the French are pretty darn good at this. And if the French can be fooled, it is not unthinkable they could fool us. And you're like, well, wait a second. You know, we've been aware of this threat since 9/11. We've been investing in our services to deal with these sorts of issues since 9/11. What changed? Well, a couple of years back, Edward Snowden talked all about how we intercept calls, how we intercept text messages, emails, all that kind of stuff. And these guys are altering the way they behave, and we have not yet adapted. Thanks a lot, Edward Snowden.
Unbelievable. That should definitely add to our desire to put him where he belongs. So, Jim, when we see that the French are completely caught flat-footed, we see stories like this that we're having a hard time keeping up with their communications. How much confidence, without trying to sound alarmist here, should we have when all of our officials come out and say, oh, we've got no credible threat going on right now?
Actually, I don't think we've seen that many people saying there is no credible threat. I mean, there's no specific credible threat, but let's face it. You know, we know there are radicals in this country. We know there are Islamists in this country. If at any point since 9/11 you thought, it's not, you know, there's no chance it's going to happen today. No, there's always a chance of that happening. Now, we can't live cowering in fear. You know, you can't stay home from the football games on the weekend. You can't be afraid to go downtown. I understand ISIS has put down a new message saying Washington is next. We can't let them bully us and push us around like this. Having said that, we'll see what happens in the next 6 months, Greg. But I'd kind of be surprised if there was no attempted attack on U.S. soil in the next 6 months.
Yeah, if there's any silver lining out of this, it appears the investigation is unfolding some important information here, maybe about how communication is done, and hopefully that will prevent other such communications from succeeding, whether it's Washington or any other major target in the Western world. So All right, on to the crazy martini now. And, of course, the president came to the briefing room on Friday night while the attacks were still going on and said it was important not to speculate as to who would be responsible for this. And at that point, we didn't know for sure, but it was soon pretty clear who was responsible for this. And then on the Sunday morning chat shows, there were a lot of questions for Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes, who was traveling with the president at the G20 summit in Turkey. Among them being what the president really meant by ISIS being contained just hours before the attack happened, but also this issue about the Syrian refugees.
Does the president now have any pause about bringing Syrian refugees into the United States?
No, Chuck. We have very extensive screening procedures for all Syrian refugees who would come to the United States. There's a very careful vetting process that includes our intelligence community, our National Counterterrorism Center, the Department of Homeland Security, so we can make sure that we're carefully screening anybody who comes to the United States. Let's remember, though, Chuck, we're also dealing with people who've horrors of war, women and children, orphans. We can't just shut our doors to those people. We need to sort out how to focus on the terrorists that we need to keep out of the country. But I think we do need to do our part to take those refugees who are in need.
Jim, as you probably know, too, there's a lot of people who aren't quite as confident about the screening process. But the idea that there's not even a moment of pause here, an idea of maybe reviewing this whatever screening process is in place, it's just full steam ahead here.
There are a lot of things that were disturbing about the Saturday night Democratic debate, but this was a really galling one. I'm baffled by the number of people who would look at this and say, oh, yeah, taking in 65,000 Syrian refugees is a good idea. We have one and perhaps two of the attackers who have already been found as sneaking in through Syrian refugees coming in through Greece. To me, that one is enough to say, all right, hold it. This is something we're doing not because we have to, right? There is not really a huge U.S. interest in bringing in lots and lots of Syrian refugees. This doesn't even make much sense. Why are they not going to Muslim countries where they speak the language, where they speak Arabic, where they have much more better chance of setting in? Apparently, they're coming in through the port of New Orleans. Greg, can you imagine a culture that will be more strange and upsetting and alien to an impoverished, frightened Syrian refugee than Bourbon Street on a Saturday night? Why not spring break in Daytona Beach or something like that? Really? Las Vegas was taken? You know, Governor Bentley in Alabama has said no. Governor Snyder in Michigan has said no. I would be really surprised if you didn't see Governor Bobby Jindal say, you know what, the hell with this. We're not. There'll be no state cooperation with this. This is a ridiculous policy. Apparently today, just as we were speaking, Greg, President Obama is giving a press conference. Slamming the door in their faces would be a betrayal of our values. You know what else is a betrayal of our values, Greg?
What?
Lots of people dying in the streets. It's baffling and maddening that our governing class refuses to recognize the threat here, is shoving these refugees down our throats when we don't want them. This is an I'm pounding my desk because you can hear me. I am really irked by this. And if the Democrats want to make this next election a referendum on this policy, let's go right ahead. I really like our odds in that discussion.
All right. On to the good martini now. And Jim, after all that we've been through and all that we've just talked with, it's almost refreshing to think back to the complete insanity that afflicted America's campuses last week and possibly still is. One of the truly mesmerizing moments over Friday was the tweets from some of the folks involved with the protests at Missouri saying, hey, let's not forget about the injustice going on here as well. We can multitask, I think, was one of the things that one of those people tweeted out. But the good news here is that the media professor, Melissa Click, she's the one who wanted some muscle. Remember when a student reporter wanted to get close to the protest, the media professor was asking basically for people to force out a reporter. Well, she is apparently still under investigation by the University of Missouri police for possible charges in terms of blocking that student reporter. And so, Jim, while we don't know what's going to happen, it appears that perhaps someone who's employed by the University of Missouri actually has a spine.
There's a part of me that would not like to see really heavy-handed police enforcement. Not every altercation that happens between two people needs to be adjudicated by the police. But this is a case where I'm perfectly fine with this. And even if it was a obnoxious behavior of reaching out, look, technically under the law, the moment you're touching somebody without their permission in an aggressive or you know, hostile manner, that's assault. If you use a stick, if you use any object, that's battery. That's my understanding. You know, Jim Garrity is not a lawyer. Do not rely on him for legal advice. But not necessarily, don't run around, you know, touching people they don't want to be touched. Keep your hands to yourself and don't use an object. We've been so used to the entire system shrugging its shoulders at completely unacceptable behavior by the left, it's really refreshing to see a change and to see them maybe held a little bit accountable. We'll see what happens. Just, even just the fact that she has to sweat criminal charges, I think is a very good point and may actually be a little bit of a deterrent to any self-appointed professor who believes that she has the right of a monopoly of force and the authority to use it against those, you know, malevolent and dangerous student photographers.
Jim, we will have to pause there for today. Hopefully we'll have much better martinis tomorrow. Talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.